From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome into a Tuesday morning edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio. Hope you had a great and safe Memorial Day. Took a bit of a break, now back with it on this Tuesday morning. SEC meetings going on this week in Destin. Also probably a week away or so from really picking up from an NCAA standpoint, the response from Ole Miss and related parties. So getting back into gear here as things should stay pretty active for a while as the summer is here, but probably not many slow news days coming up. As you've read on the side, unless you've been under a rock or been on Twitter or anywhere, Ole Miss misses the postseason in baseball first time since 2011. Turns out they were not one of the last four or first four out as well. So even though the bubble shrunk considerably on Sunday, probably had no effect on Ole Miss. They've probably been out for a little while there. Story on the site detailing that. I'll have some more stuff from Mike Bianco today. And later in the week, also a story with Tate Blackman. His future is undecided, but yesterday it wasn't really about that. He and Kobe Bortles both spoke to the media, so credit to them, team captain, showing up on a day that was incredibly hard for everybody with the program, fulfilling those media obligations. So more with those guys as the week moves ahead. As well, we've been gone. A lot of things have happened. So we'll hit some different things today and then throughout the week. As you know by now, our podcast is more of an ongoing dialogue, ongoing conversation. So we'll hit some things today. We'll hit more later. Also today, a good portion of the podcast, I speak with Colin Brister. He's a former GM sports editor, Daily Mississippian, now a sports editor in West Point, but mostly just a college baseball fanatic. He's kept the RebelGrove.com message board up to date with the bubble, with a lot of projections. Done a heck of a job. I told him I wasn't sure if I should hire him or pray for him the other day because he's probably a bigger college baseball fan than I am. But anyway, he and I speak about the bubble, some things that the committee did, some things they didn't do, and take a look at the bracket. So that coming up with you or for you here with Colin in short order. But first, let me tell you, as always, about Cradical. It's on Highway 6 West in Oxford. You get the lunch specials. You get the Plenty card. We tell you about all the time. PLENTI.com for that. And they're the title sponsor of the You Gotta Believe Football Camp, July 6th and 7th. You can register at ygbfootball.com. That's going to be at Jackson Academy. Cody Core, Evan Ingram, Dante Moncrief, Quincy Adebojo participating in that as well. So check it out if so interested. And again, it's at Jackson Academy, July 6th and 7th, ygbfootball.com. And as mentioned in the opening, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
We are Clark Ford in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. ClarkFordInc.com. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. Then you get the quote. There's no haggling. It's right to the bottom line. You can shop it around, or you can let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they have done for listeners of this podcast from, as we've been telling you, Missouri to Biloxi, from Texas to Georgia. And that's take the everyday hassle out of the car buying experience. It's just nice and simple, like I said. And then at the end of your deal, when you're finalizing everything, tell Corey you heard about Clark Ford on this podcast. You can mention the Beer Garden podcast, either one, $500 off right there. Off the bottom line, Clark Ford in Amory, 662-257-1900.
Where do you want to start? What do you want to talk about?
We can start with baseball.
Okay.
I wasn't surprised. I don't think you were either. Bottom line, whenever these things happen in any sport, you can break it down with all sorts of nuance and detail and metrics. And the end of the day, typically, teams that don't get in, they don't get in because they didn't win enough games. They didn't win enough big games. They didn't finish strong. They didn't look right at the end. Some combination of those factors usually cost you. You can analyze it, and I'm sure we will, and I know you and Colin did, and you did a great job yesterday with it. But at the bottom line, there's always an argument where, we should have gotten in over this team, or we should have gotten in over this team. Ole Miss's problem was down the stretch. It lost a series at home to Texas A&M, lost a series at Auburn, lost an SEC game at Auburn. The loss at Arkansas State I don't think was a big deal, but it didn't look good in the midst of all that. And they were out so quickly, as you talked about all along. It's one of, in my opinion, the flaws with the SEC tournament is you can play on Tuesday and be out. And they were, and they did. And I just think, as you talked about, they've kind of fell off the radar.
Yeah, it's that deal where we talked to Mike yesterday. Like I said, we'll have more throughout the week. I'll talk to him again. But to his credit, that's what he said. He said, you know, he goes, I really don't mean this in a bragging way, because there's absolutely nothing to brag about. He said he didn't understand the process enough, because they really haven't been on the bubble a lot during his 17 years. He had kind of an ignorance about where they were over the weekend, but he agreed that they were not in a good spot. And his bottom line is, you deserve what you get when you put yourself in a position to be on the bubble. And that was kind of his answer. He said that, yeah, at the end of the day, they weren't consistent enough, they didn't win enough, and that when you are at the mercy of 10 people in a room, you have to just take whatever they give you no matter what, that it's completely on them for putting themselves in that situation. So that's...
Yeah, had they gotten in, it would have been, wow, we got in. I mean, you can't... When your resume is 14 and 18 in the league, and that's probably the number that flashed...
Well, it is because of the post. I mean, Colin and I go over this. I'll read it, because I don't know if you read it on the board. You were out kind of most of the weekend. And it's really some stupidity here. It's my two issues with this thing. Is first, they are putting a huge emphasis on conference record, and I'm not saying that it shouldn't or it should. My point though is, with the unbalanced schedules, putting a primary emphasis on conference records is such a flawed argument in a weird way, because basketball goes out of its way to talk about conference record not mattering. You're not in a conference. You have just a slate of games, and whatever that slate of games is, that's what you do. So in this era of big conferences, super conferences, and unbalanced schedules, last fall, and again, I'll read this later in the podcast, so just forgive me if I read it twice. Last fall, the NCAA Baseball Committee passed a non-legislative item with the recommendation that, quote, "The committee recommends an editorial revision to the team selection principle that states, select the best available teams to fill the at-large berths, with significant consideration given to those teams with a 500 or better conference record. Rationale being, the committee believes that a minimum 500 record of conference play is an important benchmark for teams being considered for at-large selection into the championship." On its face, I really have no issue with that. It's just that in this sport, it's so weird from a scheduling standpoint. It's so weird from an unbalanced schedule standpoint that setting that type of parameter, and I said this with Kyle and he agreed, essentially is an attack on the major conferences, because it's saying, hey, we're going to get more little guys in this thing, because if you guys go 14-16 in the SEC, we're just making a reason to leave you out no matter what.
Been doing this for a while. We've had this discussion.
Pushing that direction and pushing in that direction.
I mean, we can...
Committee goes on and on yesterday about how non-conference strength of schedule was the primary factor that got teams slated where they did. However, when it wasn't, A&M gets in with a non-conference strength of schedule at 200, Ole Miss at 47. And then Miami...
What did A&M do over the weekend?
Went 0-1 in the SEC tournament. Okay. And lost 7 of their last 9 and 6 of their last 7.
Yeah, no idea.
RPI 46. But they went 16-14 in the SEC because they played Tennessee. Ole Miss and A&M had the exact same schedule, except A&M played Tennessee and Ole Miss played Florida on the road. That was it. That was the difference. And one team's in, one team's not. And it's not really about one team versus another. It's just where it doesn't make sense across their own parameters across the board. Miami goes 18-14 in the ACC and doesn't get in. You know what I mean? Pick something. Pick me a metric and then go by your metric. That's why the basketball people actually do a little better job, because at least they have an understanding
job.
Of...
Yeah, they do a pretty good job in basketball. They typically don't mess it up much. They get it basically right.
Yeah. So
they might get a team on the wrong line or whatever, but I don't... But in both sports, in baseball, the people have for a long time said, we're going to grow the sport. We're going to grow the sport, damn it. But again... If you're Ole Miss, you and Mike didn't, and you can't look at that and go, we got screwed. We should have gotten in. Nah, not really. He didn't play like a tournament team down the stretch. You needed to win more games. You needed to win 2 out of 3 against A&M if you were going to lose 2 out of 3 at Auburn. You probably needed to.
They did win 2 out of 3 against A&M.
Yeah, maybe they. Okay. You know what I mean. They didn't win enough games. 14 and 18 in the league's not going to get it done typically.
Stop playing the Governor's Cup if it counts the same as an SEC game.
I've said this for years.
On a Tuesday night when everybody's throwing their fifth starter.
I have said this for years. If the committee is going to count that as a league game, you can't play that thing anymore. Who benefits from it?
I think whichever team wins. But
who are you? You're making some money for some people in Jackson?
Yeah.
I'd kill it.
If you're the SEC, do you go to a pod system so everybody for sure plays 3 games in Hoover and takes out the 0-1 game? It's an ugly tournament, but
okay, you're asking me a question. I'm going to answer it with what I would do.
Yeah.
Nobody pays any damn attention to that damn tournament.
The committee does big time. They allow 1 week to supersede 10 weeks.
What I would do, I'd kill the tournament and play another weekend.
Pac-12 does that.
Then bully for them. Because they've got it right.
Never happened.
When I say no one pays any attention to that tournament, I mean it's not a big event anymore. Was there huge crowds there?
Well, yeah, because LSU hung around all weekend.
Okay.
Well, it depends who's in it. If Ole Miss, State, LSU, Alabama, and Auburn are in it, they have tremendous crowds.
They let those teams play at home.
When they
those
don't,
weekends.
Then they don't.
Yeah, I mean, LSU fans would go anywhere. They'd have gone to Baton Rouge all weekend. So yeah. Play the damn tournament. Play the weekend there. I don't like the tournament. It gets too much weight. I'm not crazy about conference basketball tournaments because they get too much weight. Why should they matter more than a game in January?
Well, it's the NCAA, A, wanting the exposure for the week, and B, for trying to act like they're all these true believer good Samaritans that want everybody to have an equal chance. Because if not, give the stupid regular season winner that automatic berth. If we're going to do automatic berths, let it be the regular season winner. Quit the bid stealing crowd. Quit letting the 20 and 32 team get into the tournament.
I couldn't agree more.
Allow 4 months to matter more than 1 week.
I couldn't agree more.
Missouri State doesn't win their conference tournament. They got in anyway, but they could have not gotten in after going 18-1 in their conference because Illinois State beats them for a couple days, 1 week on a neutral site in May. Weirdest thing ever. But anyway,
I'm in the exact same boat. I don't particularly care for the conference tournament.
Hang around for more baseball talk coming up in a little bit with Colin. Congratulations, Braden Thornberry, winning the golf Division I NCAA title yesterday, besting a pretty accomplished field, including Scottie Scheffler at Texas, Matthias Schwab at Vanderbilt, and more. Ole Miss had advanced to Nationals as a team. They did not make the cut after 54 holes, but Braden fires a 71 on a day where the course average was 77.6. 20 birdies and 72 holes, and joins a pretty talented list of former champions there. He's getting a first taste of his PGA Tour next week in Memphis for the FedEx St. Jude Classic. He also has qualified for the RSM Classic in the fall. It's the tournament hosted by Davis Love III. So congrats to Braden. Really good putt for Ole Miss last night. The Golf Channel has finally figured it out, put some individual titles on the line, put some match play, and put it in prime time when nothing else is going on if you like golf. So, because
it's a lot easier to follow that than it is the team stuff.
Yeah, I got one guy. Well, the team stuff's good match play. Like individual, but stroke play team is right. All over the place, and hard. And
people who don't play a lot of golf do not understand that.
They don't understand the format because some players' scores don't count, some players do count.
It's completely unfollowable.
Yeah, but individual winners, we get that, and then match play, we get that.
Sure.
Again, Braden, really, really good all week. Really cool success story, honestly. Something that should help in recruiting, should help him out if he chooses to fulfill his 4 years of eligibility. That's a good question now, and it's something I'm not really trying to pose it as a negative. I just don't know. I don't know if him winning yesterday kind of changes his plans for the future a little bit because he's won the Jones Cup and now he's won an NCAA title. Not a lot left at the amateur level for Braden at this point.
Yeah, I don't know enough about it to comment.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, you know, I don't necessarily think he's necessarily tour ready, but it does pose the question of what, when, why, how, and where. So, anyway, congratulations to him. We'll have more, I'm sure, on that at some point. I think they're coming back today. But you can check the site. I put together some stuff on that. It is up at rebelgrove.com as well.
The podcast brought to you by Harry Alexander. There is no 10 thoughts this weekend. They'll be back next weekend, good Lord willing. And Harry is an Oxford-based Remax Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than 4 decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better than Harry. Go to his site. It's harryalexander.com. Send him an email, ha@harryalexander.com. The podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, look no further than Grenada Nissan. They've got everything you're looking for, new, previously owned, great lease deals as well. Get in touch with Gene and Sandy Grass there at Grenada Nissan. They'll take great care of you. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Podcast also brought to you by John Fryer and Tuna Chesa Charters in Biloxi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions, knows where to put you on the fish you want to catch. Tuna Chesa Charters, located at 200 East 8th, Slip C2 in Biloxi. For more information, check out their Facebook page. Call 228-348-7817. Whether you're looking for a quick fishing trip inshore, a serious deep sea fishing excursion, or anything in between, let John and the folks at Tuna Chesa Charters take care of you. By the way, some great news for you. If you're headed down to the coast for vacation anytime in the next month or so, snapper season has been extended 70 days for any in-state waters.
Why? Why 70 days? It's a long time.
I know, it's a long time.
It's not like, hey, 10 days, get an extra weekend. 70 days.
70 days.
That's changing the whole complexion of it.
Might change some people's vacation plans. Might change what they do on a vacation day. Hanging out at the Gulf, and you say, you know what, I'm going to run over to Biloxi and get some snapper. I like snapper.
Do you?
Yeah, snapper's good.
Yeah.
I love fish. I don't miss a whole lot about living in the coast.
Fish
I miss
is one.
That, for sure.
Yeah, that's fair. So, Houston Nutt wants an apology.
Okay. So, here we go. I read the article. Pat Forty wrote the article. It's no secret to anybody, including our employer, that Pat and I do not care for one another. We don't exchange Christmas cards. I doubt if we would do much to help the other.
How many people sent you that story?
A lot.
Me too.
He had three things wrong. That's it. I actually thought the article was fairly well written. And I'll be honest, it's going to piss some people off, but I think Houston Nutt has a point to a degree.
Yeah, in an isolated situation.
Houston Nutt has a point to a point. Now.
Totality point, hell no.
No. Now, where do you want to start with this?
Wherever you want.
Okay.
You got a minute?
Pat clearly got his feelings hurt when he wrote the original story in January of 16. And so many people wrote that basically the story was wrong. So let me get this out. Pat was right in January of 2016, and the sources who told multiple news outlets, including this one, that the majority was on Nutt and the majority was on non-football stuff, they lied to us.
Track and women's basketball.
They lied to us. There's no other word for it. They lied. Misled, if you want to go there, if that makes you feel more politically correct, happy, okay, they misled. It was a Friday. It wasn't a hit piece, because a hit piece is inaccurate. It was right. The timing of that piece was designed to hurt.
Yeah, a little nuance there.
Now, was that Pat or was that the NCAA? I don't know. I don't really have a problem with Pat writing the story on a Friday. That's when he got it, I think. There's no proof at all that Pat conspired with the NCAA to put that out on a Friday at noon, right literally in the hours of kids arriving for a huge official visit weekend. I can't prove that. No one else can either. So to make that allegation is not fair. And people have made it, and it's not fair. People at Ole Miss have made that allegation, and it comes across as petty and paranoid on their part, because the story was accurate. And when we went to Ole Miss and people around Ole Miss for comment, what was fed to us was misleading. because they were trying to keep
Luckily designed to get the weekend through.
To get through the weekend to protect themselves. And it made people like us look really bad, frankly.
And continues to because of what we're talking about.
Looks bad. So Pat talks to Houston Nutt, who is upset at that narrative. And I don't blame him. Because the only thing on Houston Nutt in both NOAs is the David Saunders stuff.
Which is a whole other level of nuance that I don't have time for today.
And in fairness to Houston Nutt, Houston Nutt never wanted to hire David Saunders. Now I can tell you that for an absolute fact. Now you want to get into what David did or didn't do or what's proven or not proven or whatever. Man, I don't have the time. Ole Miss admitted to it, whether it happened or not. You're getting charged with it and you're going to get convicted of it. Whether you...
You pled guilty.
Believe it or not, it is what it is.
Now, quickly, this being the reason Houston Nutt is not employed is complete and utter crap.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that in a second.
Okay.
Now, Pat wrote, correct me if I'm wrong, do you have it in front of you?
I do.
Okay, good, because I don't, because I've looked at it enough.
Okay, what do you mean to read?
Pat wrote that this is going to all get resolved in June.
He did.
It ain't. If this is getting resolved in
He said multiple sources told him that.
Yeah. I don't think that's accurate. If it is accurate, we've been lied to again by a lot of people that I don't think have any motivation to flat look us in the eye and lie to us.
His paragraph on that, or the sentence. In response, the school self-imposed a 2017 postseason ban. A hearing before the NCAA Committee on Infractions is expected in June, multiple sources told Yahoo Sports.
A hearing?
Yeah.
Well, June starts Thursday. Ole Miss has not even released its response yet.
No, it has filed it, though.
It has filed it.
The release is really relevant.
The NCAA has 60 days to respond. I guess it is conceivable.
They respond absolutely immediately and then schedule one.
And schedule one in June.
Because Ole Miss people have told us that there's no necessarily set schedule on these hearings. As long as everybody's available, they can pop them up whenever they need to.
So, if that's right, Pat has an exclusive, and I'll give him credit for it if it comes to pass.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm not. So, anybody that's out there listening to this at Yahoo or Rivals, I'm not saying he's wrong. I have no way to corroborate that independently. No one at Ole Miss, and Chase, you've been in a lot of these conversations with me, mm-hmm. No one at Ole Miss has told us, yeah, there's a chance we could hear this in June.
No.
We've heard the earliest is August.
Because the Ole Miss, at least publicly, has operated under the timeline of October to November for a final resolution.
But we've had private conversations with people where they could have said, hey, there's a chance. Well, yeah. I've never even gotten.
Well, I mean, even private, public, anything.
Yeah, I've never gotten any feedback from anyone there that makes me believe this could get heard in June. That would seem like you are really moving things quickly.
Yeah.
Okay. Pat refers to us as a fan site.
Just a shot, whatever, move on.
My life would be a lot easier if I ran a fan site.
Yeah, I don't want to get bogged down in that, though. No, that's just a shot at us. It's no big deal.
It was a gratuitous shot at us that I felt was really unprofessional because we work for the same damn people, Pat.
But we understand the dynamic behind that. It is what it is.
You know, I wish Rivals would protect us a little bit more on that, but they don't want to fight that fight and whatever. We're a news outlet. We cover Ole Miss. We don't run it like a fan site. He should know better. Then someone at Rivals should have said something to him, but whatever. Houston Nutt's not employed today because his last two seasons at Ole Miss, the product that he put on the field and, frankly, off the field was deplorable.
As off his own.
It was awful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on him. His last two seasons at Ole Miss were abysmal. And that's on him. Not on anybody else. They did not recruit particularly well. They were not a particularly disciplined team. And his team quit on him, which is a really bad sign for a coach. Houston Nutt did a lot of really good things at Arkansas, and he did a lot of really good things for two seasons at Ole Miss. But the last two seasons at Ole Miss were really, really bad. And from an optic standpoint, it makes him unemployable. The NCAA stuff is not the reason that Houston Nutt is not back in coaching. Programs that he could probably in the past get a job at now go with a younger coach. Programs have figured out you have a better chance of success at getting a young assistant who's going to make some mistakes on a small stage, but is going to bring energy and drive to your program because he's trying to use your program as a stepping stone.
Ironically, what Houston did to Ole Miss in 08.
You're better off doing that than getting a retread.
Nutt's quote, "My name wasn't mentioned in the report, but my name's on the ticker on television. My name is thrown out there a lot. It's a frustrating thing. I'm 59 years old. It's not like I'm going to get the next big job, but you miss ball so much. It's just bad when you get hit from all sides and blindsided by it." His attorney says that he has been attempting to get communication started with Ole Miss without a whole lot of luck.
Yeah, I mean, he has an isolated point. His overreaching point is flawed. He has an isolated point.
I think he really just wants an apology. What's he want?
Wants money. Not going to get it. He's never going to be able to prove, in my opinion, that people slandered him.
Fall under strict scrutiny, I would think. You'd have to prove that they did it, that they
did it maliciously.
That, yeah, not only they did it, but they did it in an absolute attempt to harm you.
He might get a little something out of it somewhere, but he ain't going to get the kind of money that he probably wants. And the whole it's killing my career thing, nah. If you don't have Jeremiah Masoli, was that 2010?
It's 2010.
They might not win two games. Evidenced by the fact in 2011 they didn't have Jeremiah Masoli and they won two games. And to this date, I'm shocked that they won one of them. I still don't know how the hell they won at Fresno that night. They were beat.
Oh, that's the one that you're confused by?
I look back on it and go, how'd they win that? 2010, I don't know how they beat Kentucky.
The clock didn't have 25 more seconds on it.
It was getting away fast.
All those Hail Marys down the sidelines for the fourth quarter.
I mean, I'm not ripping Houston. It just his product those last 2 years was really, really bad. I mean, they didn't just lose to Alabama and LSU. It was name your score.
It was my brain fart the other day. I'm sitting in Hoover, and it was during the little rain delay or before the Ole Miss game against Auburn before they rained. It was just kind of some of sitting around the table, and David Kellum was sitting there, and I said, and he was sitting with us, and I said, "What are y'all doing programming wise because of this or whatever?" And he goes, "Oh, we play old games." I said, "Okay, what games y'all play?" He goes, "Well, we don't do baseball because people get confused. They hear me talking and think it's the current game, so we really don't do baseball." I said, "Okay." He goes, "You know, we'll do the Alabama games. We'll do an Egg Bowl from here or there or whatever." And he goes, "You know, we do the BYU game." And BYU. I sit there and I went, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa." Like the one where Nick Brazel dropped the touchdown? I was like, "How in the, like?" And I'm like going, he goes, no, the basketball game, the comeback.
Oh.
And I went, "Oh, that makes sense." But I got really confused there. I thought, I don't think you pulled the Nutt special out for the rain delay programming, but good enough. That's fine.
Anyway. I've had people say, "Man, that season's different if he catches that ball." I'm like, "Nah, not really."
They beat BYU.
They go 5-7 instead of 4-8, but no, they're not particularly different. Team was flawed.
If playing a little devil's advocate, if they're 4-7 or whatever at the time, or not 4-7, whatever the record is that enough juice to beat OSU, beat Arkansas? 6-6.
He got his team
easing up into one.
He got his teams up for those games.
He did. He played well.
Just didn't have enough.
I told you, Masoli should have got some Heisman votes.
No doubt.
I mean, 11 would have still crashed, but.
Yeah. Maybe, but probably not. That team was really flawed all over the place.
Yeah, you're
Masoli
right.
Masoli played his butt off, man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ole Miss people, you got your year's worth out of him. Whatever that scholarship was worth, you got your money's worth. He was – I always laugh at people. One of my problems with some of the national media types, real quick, as we finish this up, a lot of my problem with 40 stems from the whole Peach Bowl thing when he and others launched into all that lazy good bow, bad bow narrative. And then on that Peach Bowl day, it was like Ole Miss should take him out. To put in who? And it's – you have to understand the way some of these national media guys are. They are a little fraternity, and Twitter is their way of showing who can be the funniest and the most creative on that given day. And it becomes this little pat on the back thing. Oh, that was really funny there, John. And they just go back and forth. And I said simply to Pat that day on Twitter, well, who do you take out? Who do you put in? If you take Bo Wallace out on his last college game, a kid who, frankly, if Bo Wallace decides, I'm going to Texas, and Texas wanted Bo Wallace.
Or Mississippi State.
Or Mississippi State, or I'm sure there was somebody else.
But yeah, I don't remember.
Either sure. One of those two schools. He goes, you know what, man, I don't want to do the freeze thing again. I did it once, nothing against him, but it didn't work out. And that was part of the damn discussion, fellas.
Yeah, they had to get on terms.
I'm going to go to Texas. Texas was kind of – Texas at that moment when Bo was
– cool.
When Bo was making that decision at that moment, Texas was a better program than Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah, they were still way on the other side compared to that night in Austin when Ole Miss popped them.
Yes.
Yeah.
They were still – no one around Bo Wallace would have said, what the hell are you thinking going to Texas instead of Ole Miss? No one. Not a damn soul.
No.
Houston, I mean, Hugh Freeze included.
Yeah.
So you had to have some context to what Bo Wallace had meant to that program.
Most important recruit of the Freeze era. Period.
It would have been completely inappropriate, wrong, and unfair to unceremoniously yank him from that game in the second quarter. And that's all I said. And I was told, mind your own beat, and it went on and on and on, and that's where the thing got started. But the national guys do that, and it's kind of lazy. And sometimes we call them on it. The national guys did that to Masoli. Masoli's a bust. Look, no.
He's playing his tail off.
No. Masoli had a really strong year.
Yeah.
And sometimes that gets construed as, oh, you're a fan and you're a fan running a fan site. No.
I'm bashing the rest of the team.
I'm a beat writer covering this team, and I know it better than you know it. Can you imagine me commenting like on UCLA right now? I don't know what I'm talking about. I have an overview from 40,000 feet. No, I'm in the beat. He goes, mind your own beat. And it was kind of like, I am.
You came over into my beat.
I'm trying to help you here. What are they going to do? Put in Devontae Kincaid?
Yeah.
Anyway. Broadcast also brought to you by 7 South Tailgating. Speaking of football, it's getting closer than you might think. 7 South Tailgating is owned and operated by husband and wife duo Kyle and Jordan Thornton, both of whom are Ole Miss alumni, avid fans. 7 South Tailgating, equipped with the largest staff in the Grove, can service most of any of your tailgating needs. They offer SEC-only and full-season packages. 7 South will set it up for you. They have complete rental packages. Fans can provide all their gear. 7 South sets it up. 7 South offers complete setup, game day concierge, post-game trash removal, equipment breakdown, year-round storage. They will set up anywhere in the Grove, the Circle, or on the outskirts of the Ole Miss campus. 7 South Tailgating is the largest vendor in the Grove, yet they still manage to know each customer personally by name. 7 South typically sells out for every game, so visit the site today to secure your spot. If you give 7 South a try for one season, you'll never tailgate without them again. The site is 7southtailgating.com. You can reach them by cell 662-321-1682. The podcast also brought to you by a new advertiser today, Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used Comer for AC repair, and you can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, and their work is second to none. Comer is an American Standard dealer, but they work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their website, comerheatingandair.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast, and you get $20 off. Contact Eric at 662-934-3846 or Shane at 662-832-8800. 8749. We mentioned earlier that the month of May is coming to an end in 2 days. So you still have a little bit of time if you're looking for something active to do this summer. The Oxford Park Commission has you covered during the hottest months of the year. Registration for instructional programs is ongoing through Wednesday. Tennis, golf, gymnastics, cheerleading, fencing, and karate. Just some of the many activities youth and adults can take part in. For more information on summer programs, visit them online, oxfordparkcommission.com. Like them on Facebook at Oxford Parks Commission. Follow them on Twitter at Oxford Parks Rec or on Instagram at Oxford Parks. Live well, play well, have fun.
Now, some more baseball talk. Again, Colin Brister joins us on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline.
Colin, thanks for spending a few minutes with us today. Ole Miss, as we've been talking about, left out of the field of 64. Looks like now that the committee has talked to some different media on a press conference today, a teleconference, they had the situation with this morning, or we're taping this on Sunday, with the selection show. Looks like it wasn't even close. You've got 6-7 bid stealers, and I think for all the teeth gnashing and all your hard work on the message board over the course of the week, I don't think they were even maybe in it as of Friday, the way, you know, looking back now.
I don't think it was even close. And I kind of found that addendum where if you don't finish above 500 in conference, it's going to be tight for you to get in. And, you know, that's kind of the thing is they went to Hoover. And I'm not even sure if they beat Auburn if they're in at this point. That's what's really interesting is a lot of us thought if they had won that game against Auburn, they were probably in it. I'm not even sure they would have been in at that point. I think they may have had to make a little more noise in Hoover than that.
Well, it's what we had always thought. You know, in years past, you know, the 15-win bubble was broken a couple years ago when Missouri didn't get in with 15 SEC wins, and then last year Alabama and Kentucky didn't get in with 15 wins. However, the RPIs were atrocious, so you always played that up to, well, if you have a competitive RPI, it's probably still okay. And we kind of made ourselves believe that it was this or that, but now looking back, as you said, you discovered this, and I didn't know it. I hadn't run across it. Last November, the Division I Baseball Committee in their meeting passed an action item, as they called it, and the recommendation was, quote, the committee recommends an editorial revision to the team selection principles that state, quote, select the best available teams to fill the at-large berths with significant consideration given to those teams with a 500 or better conference record. The rationale they give: the committee believes that a minimum 500 record in conference play is an important benchmark for teams being considered for at-large selection into the championship. Because of that's happened, Ole Miss was 14-16 in the regular season. They lost one in Hoover, 14-17. Governor's Cup counts too. They actually were 14-18 on the sheets when the committee members got them. If that's the rationale, they frankly had no chance despite a 37 RPI. I played up all day Sunday against A&M as A&M went 16-14 in the league, and the schedules were exactly the same. Ole Miss played Florida, A&M played Tennessee, and that's the difference. You got to think if you swap that around, Ole Miss goes 3-3, maybe against some teams or different things. They're in this thing as well, and A&M's not. So it's an interesting move there as we kind of get this thing started. What do you think the rationale is maybe for this change? Because to me, it makes no sense. Softball didn't do this. You know, Georgia was in despite winning 3 SEC games for how many ever weeks in softball a couple weeks ago when we started paying attention to that. And now with the super conferences, the continued expansion, the imbalanced schedule that gets worse and worse by the day and by the year, now they put in this 500 thing. It appears to be a way to kind of penalize major conferences.
That's exactly what it is. You know, I kind of think it's funny. They don't do it in basketball. So why do it in baseball? If you do it in basketball, I kind of look at this, you take out a Syracuse team in 2016 that makes the Final Four. So it doesn't make any sense, because if you're going to sit here and tell me that a Gonzaga team that went 20-22-9 in the West Coast Conference that wasn't very good, just to keep it real, is better than an Ole Miss team that went 14-16 in the SEC, then I'm just not going to believe that. I think that's the reason they were sick. The SEC got 10 teams in 2014, and I think at that point, they kind of wanted to limit the SEC teams and to make it at least a little more difficult. And I think they've accomplished that.
So now, going into next season, you're probably going to have to finish over 500. And maybe – let me back up. It's a podcast. I can do a couple things. Let's start with this. if you're one of the people that's on an extreme here, probably not the rest of this interview for you. You probably can turn it off now or fast forward to whatever Neil and I are talking about after this is over, because we're all in agreement here. Ole Miss had plenty of opportunities to solidify their berth in the NCAA tournament. They had plenty of chances. They really faltered down the stretch. They lost a series against Auburn. They lost in the first game of the SEC tournament. They lost to Arkansas State. Find your reasoning why they didn't make it. They got swept by Florida. They got swept by Mississippi State. They had chances. They played 31 games against the top 50. They played 34 games against the top 51 because Missouri just slid out. So, look, we're all in agreement they had chances. That's not what this is. This is a look at all the warts on bubble teams, because this bubble was terrible. It was a large bubble that shrunk to nothing because of bid stealers. And we have to find a way to kind of mix these up, parse them out, and figure out who's in the tournament. Clearly, the selection committee's already done that. Ole Miss was not one of them. And here we go. I just wanted to get that out of the way first. It's kind of a disclaimer. So, going into next year, Ole Miss had a 47th non-conference strength of schedule. They played East Carolina. They played Southern Miss a couple times. All these different things. So, they've got this 47. A&M's at 200. And the committee told Kendall Rogers on Sunday that non-conference strength of schedule was a major factor in selecting teams. It appears to me that the factors change depending on where you were on the sheet. To me, host sites were very RPI-oriented. Host sites were very non-conference strength of schedule-oriented. But then when it got down to the bubble teams, to me it went almost explicitly by conference standing and maybe a quality win here or there.
It's funny that they mentioned non-conference strength of schedule and then have UCLA as the last team in that has a 23 strength of non-conference strength of schedule and a 19-11 record in the pack. I mean, you know, that's kind of the thing. I think they're so inconsistent that it's not funny. St. John's has a 255 non-conference strength of schedule. I mean, I think that they just justify reasons to put teams in. And I don't think necessarily they did a bad job this year. It's just funny the way they make certain cases for certain teams and put them in based on that. But when that whatever they claim may not apply to someone else, it's just kind of inconsistent the way they do it.
Well, the teams that we talked about, and we'll kind of go through them here, that I thought, it's not really even an Ole Miss thing. It's just a college baseball thing when you're looking through this. So St. John's gets in. And I thought the whole time they had to win their conference tournament. I'd kind of talked to people all weekend, to get the automatic bid there, and thought if they don't do that, there's just nothing in this resume that sticks out to me. There's nothing in this resume that says, hey, they have to get an at-large bid. Because, look, they went 42-11. I get that. RPI was at 36. Bubbly, pretty good, whatever. Top 50, 1-0. They beat North Carolina in a Wednesday midweek game. A Wednesday midweek game, not even a Tuesday. So something that typically has no relevance whatsoever. Played one top 50 team, and they are getting a massive break. And this is where college baseball loses so many people, Colin, in my opinion, because they look at these different teams by region. And they're giving St. John's a tremendous break because they say they can't control their midweek scheduling as much as anybody else. So they completely take it off the table and don't even worry about it.
Yeah, St. John's, I mean, there's precedent to leave them out, too, because, and I don't know why I looked at this, but 2013 Campbell had the exact same thing, left them out.
You picked that up? You went back and looked at 2013 Campbell?
Yeah, don't ask.
Okay, go ahead.
But that's the thing is St. John's had an okay, I guess, top 100 record, but it didn't schedule anyone outside of their conference. They played five games outside of their conference, I believe that's right, that were top 100 games. If you don't even try on your schedule, and that's the thing. It's not like they weren't going south to play teams, because I got a feeling they weren't playing in New York during February. I don't know. I think St. John's was, now that you look back on it, since they didn't mention them with the last four, I think they were always just going to find an excuse to put those guys in.
I think they were always in, and I think Missouri State was always in. And I really don't have much of a problem with Missouri State, frankly.
I don't either.
For the most part. They're 18-1 in the Missouri Valley, lost one game. They got beat in their conference tournament, and they went 40-17. But they put such an emphasis on RPI. Three RPI top 50 games, 0-3. They did not get a single win against the RPI top 50. But as the committee talked about with non-conference RPI, they ended up at 30. So they played some good teams. They played 16 games against the top 100. So I see some teeth gnashing about Missouri State. Kind of mentioned them strictly to say, I have no problem with that. I think they should be in the field. Don't, frankly, even have much of a problem with them being a two seed as they kind of move on through the bracket.
Yeah, the thing with them is they had that non-conference strength schedule at 21. And obviously that the committee supposedly put an emphasis on that. So I think they were fine. 18-1 is always going to get you into the tournament if you have those metrics. The thing with St. John's that bothers me is they didn't even win the Big East. They came in second in the Big East, and they still got a break because of that. That one's going to bother me for a little while. And it's not an Ole Miss thing. It's, you know, I enjoy college baseball, so I'd like the best teams to be in. And you take a team that doesn't even win their tournament, doesn't even win their league, have one top 50 win. I mean, it's kind of hard to justify them putting those guys in.
So as I move through this thing, Miami, their RPI 41, non-conference RPI 100. So if you're going to fault things, maybe use that as a metric. 30-27 overall. The regular season was not very good on an overall basis. But you look up, they go 16-13 in the ACC, and I really want to talk about them because I think this could be like the SEC one year. I mean, obviously the ACC is incredibly strong, so an Ole Miss or somebody could be in this situation where they have a 16-13 conference record. They fulfill that thing where the committee back in the fall goes, okay, here's your emphasis, here's what you do, you win your conference games, that's how you get selected. RPI within range because Auburn got in at 45, A&M, who we'll get to in a second, got in at 46. Everything's there, but they get left out because they don't beat a team in the regular season that is a postseason team. They get swept by Florida, and then they pick up wins against Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, Duke, Pitt, and Boston College. I mean, absolutely the dregs of the ACC. They lose to North Carolina State. They lose to Louisville. They lose to North Carolina. They lose to Wake Forest. They lose to all the good teams. But with this era of imbalanced schedules, and as this continues to get worse, because look, the SEC is not going to stop the SEC tournament. They're not going to play more than 10 league weekends. I asked Mike Bianco about it on Sunday, and it was more just, I guess, to waste some of my breath, because I know that's never going to happen, but I was still kind of curious what he said. We could very easily have a West team an East team that plays all the East. You get a couple, you know, you lose to Florida, you lose to whomever else is decent that year, South Carolina, I guess, Vanderbilt. And then you go through and you beat, you know, say you're Kentucky. You beat Tennessee, you beat Georgia, then you beat some of the worst West teams. They could have this exact same situation. I mean, it's just a weird deal where, as you said, everybody's all over the place. There's no combined metric that says, okay, this is why this team got in, this is why this team didn't get in. And I don't think that the sport has grown enough to even really have anybody challenge it. Because like you said with basketball, Corey Keyes mentioned this on Twitter on Sunday. In basketball, they make a point to say conference record means nothing. Just look at the teams on a totality of their resume, whereas baseball has emphasized that. I think you're just going to lose more people from the sport here. I think the lack of transparency on how they're going about picking teams throughout the process probably is just another black eye as they're already, you know, struggling in ratings and struggling picking up more than niche audiences.
It seems like they kind of just overthink this. I mean, if you look at St. John's, it's kind of funny that the basketball committee left off a team, I guess, 2 years ago. Ole Miss played them in the NIT, and Monmouth, who did the exact same thing. They ran through their conference and then got put out in their conference tournament. Well, they had two top 100 wins and one top 50. Well, they can go to the postseason. And I don't know if it's about what they're trying to do with growing the game. I don't know how many people in St. John's or wherever that's located, I think it's New York, is going to watch St. John's. I mean, it's getting to a point where it's kind of silly. You look at Miami, I mentioned them, the conference win has to be the thing that kept them out, because when you compare them beside that metrically, beside Texas A&M, it's not even a contest. The only thing, Texas A&M has a better non-conference RPI, but every other metric, Miami wins, I guess, except top 50 wins, but that's extremely close. I think it's a few percentage points off. That's what's crazy is I think they did go through, and I'm glad they did. They did go through and see teams and reward teams for winning series, because baseball is supposed to be played in series. That's how it's supposed to be done. And I do think there was some reward for that, as you mentioned, with Miami only having beaten Georgia Tech in the regular season. So I don't know. It's interesting how they're going to continue to do this. You know, a lot of people had UConn. That was kind of one I was interested in. They had them kind of safely in, and the reasoning was, well, UConn was geographically, I guess, hampered. Well, UConn wound up missing it with a much better resume, in my opinion, than St. John's. I don't know. It's one of the more fascinating things as we go forward, kind of looking at how they're going to do this.
Is there anything you picked up on this year? Because, frankly, you study it more than I did, because I kind of disconnected the last few days. Is there anything where Kendall, Aaron, Mark, Mike Rooney, all those guys took something into account the past seasons and then it didn't work out, where you thought that's interesting, where we might actually have a change in philosophy moving forward with the committee?
Yes. The Western Conference, or the teams out west, did not get benefits in the RPI. Not one bit. Gonzaga gets left out at 49 with, I think, a good many top 100 wins. Let's see, 17 and 15 against the top 100. UCLA is I can't remember if they were the last team in or the next to last team in. They went 19-11 in the Pac-12, beat Stanford in a series on the road, beat Oregon State. They were one of Oregon State's four losses. Well, 19-11, they had a 52 RPI, and they were the second to last team in. I thought that was interesting because, you know, the last few years, they've given benefit to the doubt to the RPI teams that maybe had a lower RPI on the West Coast. And they didn't do that this year at all. I mean, that's kind of obvious, and that's interesting going forward.
We'll take a quick break in our conversation with Colin to tell you about Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga, 30 years old this year, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All underwriting and processing done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. Also the leader in condo financing in Oxford. Ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float-down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. Shoot Jason an email, JLOWE, at communitymtg.com. Also, the podcast brought to you by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape. MasterCuts, full-service lawn maintenance and landscape company serving Oxford, Tupelo, and the surrounding areas. Founded on two simple philosophies. They do what they say they're going to do when they say they're going to do it. And they have open and honest communication with customers and employees. I am a customer. I can vouch for them that no job is too large or small for MasterCuts. Some of the services include landscape design, installation, landscape lighting, irrigation, maintenance, turf. They even do holiday lighting for the holiday season. So give them a call for a free quote, 662-607-7773, mastercutslawn.com. Sign an annual contract. First cut is on them if you mention the podcast. Now back to the podcast.
Yeah, I really completely agree with that. And that would indicate to me maybe a change that's better for the Southern teams, though, right? Because in the past, there's been beat stewards from the West Coast where the SEC teams have had the better RPIs, frankly, much better than this year because the SEC RPIs lagged a little bit, and suddenly maybe it's going to even back out. Is that might be the one counterpoint to the SEC getting punished over conference record?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, there was a lot of benefit of the doubt given last year. Washington last year was a team that got in with a 57 RPI, and I don't think that team gets in this year. You know, you kind of look, UCLA 52, last team in, second to last team in. That's going to be, I guess, a positive for the Southern teams. Is they're not really listening to RPI bias. And maybe it's just Gonzaga got left out. But it's really, they're not giving benefits of the doubt anymore. They didn't this year with West Coast RPI.
All right. We were surprised by Auburn being one of the last in with A&M, as we mentioned, strength of schedule, but it just kind of is what it is. We mentioned the conference standing was the main indicator there. Let's actually go through one. I don't have anybody else to do this with later in the week, even though I may get Kendall or Aaron on. So I'll get your opinion here because, like I said, you've studied this thing more than I have. Well, let me ask this first. Let's take Campbell from 13 out. What was the statistic, the team, or what did you look at the last week that made you feel the worst about yourself?
Old Dominion. I thought their top 100 record would just get them in. And, you know, I had them in early this morning, and they didn't. I think they were the third team out. And you look back, I think, you know, and it's kind of interesting to me. I wonder sometimes if they punish teams by conference. Like Southern Miss the CUSA had a bid stole yesterday. Well, I wonder if they knock out a CUSA team because of that. But Old Dominion, when I look back at it, they didn't really have that RPI. They were 51, 52 that fluctuated. I think they ended up at 50. They probably really didn't have much of a shot now that I think about it. But their top 100, they were 18 and 13 against the top 100, 87 against the top 50, which is really good for a CUSA school. Looking back, I should have considered that RPI more, but I just didn't. But that's kind of on me because I thought they would give benefits of the doubt to teams like that, and it was obvious this year they kind of didn't.
Yeah, I'll forgive you. It'll probably be okay. All right. Corvallis, Oregon, number one national seed, Oregon State, 49-4 on the year. Good grief. They actually have the highest winning percentage right now of any team in college baseball history. So if they win the title, they also claim that. I think Arizona State went 63-6 or something. And Oregon State currently has them beat in that. So if you want to follow something and be a complete dork, Oregon State can statistically become the best team in college baseball history. I have a hard time believing that Holy Cross, Yale, or Nebraska puts a stop to the Beavers this weekend.
None of them have a prayer. not a prayer. I watched Nebraska. Don't ask why I'm not watching Nebraska either. I did watch them this week, and they don't have. They hit enough. But Oregon State just doesn't let you score, and you're not going to win if you don't score. So Oregon State will walk through that, and they'll walk. They get Clemson in their super regional. Clemson's probably not even going to win that regional. I think Vanderbilt comes out of that. So they're going to get Clemson or Vanderbilt, and they're going to hurt their feelings too. So Oregon State's the best team in the country right now.
A little bit of a note here on why those teams got sent to Oregon. Yale and Holy Cross sharing a charter flight is why they were both sent to Corvallis, Oregon.
Yeah. And Texas is going to Long Beach State, and Texas A&M is going to Houston. This game makes a lot of sense if you think about it.
Yeah, help me out with that. I mean, I'll get to that in a second because we'll get to that regional. But so A&M is one of the last teams in, and they get, quote, punished by getting sent to Houston to play that team versus the Longhorns going back to California again after they've already played Stanford this year?
Yeah, I don't get it. The only thing with Texas, and, you know, we mentioned that 500 conference mark. Here's something interesting about them. They went 11-12 in the Big 12, and they had an 18 RPI. They went 3-2 this week to finish, I guess, 14-14. If they don't make that run in the tournament, they could have gotten left out with a top 20 RPI. That would have been what was really interesting to me. And maybe they were punishing them for the conference record. I don't know, but it's kind of ridiculous that A&M going to Houston and Texas has to go to Long Beach. I don't know who the Long Beach regionals matched up with. I'm sure not. Anything they'd like to deal with, but yeah, that's the thing. It just doesn't make any sense. Why does Texas get punished when A&M doesn't? We're dealing with a committee that I don't think ranks urgent.
You well, Long Beach is matched up with Stanford, so it's very possible the Longhorns could play the Cardinal again in the next round if they got out of that. You mentioned Clemson. They've got St. John's as the 3. We've talked about they've got Vanderbilt as the 2. And they could see Kyle Wright in a winner's bracket game on the second day.
They will see Kyle Wright in a winner's bracket game because St. John's is not beating the Randy kid from Vanderbilt.
Yep.
That's not happening. So the Kyle Wright will face, I guess, Clemson in the second round game. That's why I think Vanderbilt comes out of there. Now, Vanderbilt's not going to win in Corvallis or anything. But I tell you what, if that's the last team I would want as my 2 seed is Vanderbilt. Good God.
Yeah, I saw somebody talking about how, they were a 2 seed and this and that. It's still the most talented team in the SEC. I don't care what the record is. I mean, they are the most talented team in the league.
Yeah. They've got first-round pitchers, I mean, on Friday and Saturday. You know, I mean, they've got Florida up too, but they're ridiculous. And I think they walked through that Clemson original pretty easily. I mean, Clemson didn't get out of the original last year either. That's going to be one to follow. Clemson probably shouldn't have hosted, to be honest. I think Vanderbilt comes out of that pretty easily and goes to Corvallis and then comes home.
At least they're not matching up Vanderbilt and Louisville again. I'm so sick of seeing that.
I just penciled them in to go to Louisville. That seemed like the thing they did. If I'm Kentucky this morning, though, I'm dead. I mean, that sending them to Louisville is kind of out there again. I mean, I guess you can put them on a bus. Man, that doesn't seem fair.
Well, it's back to our whole point for the day. The NCAA does it's regional travel, and we're doing this and that, while they also make Yale go to Corvallis, Oregon. So, yeah, thanks. That's appreciated. Stanford Regional, they get the last national seed. Their coach finishing up his career, his 41 years. Can you imagine message boards in 41 or something? It might be Bianco's here 41 years.
Yeah, and Marquise missed regionals too, like back-to-back years. Ooh, that would be an exciting match for.
You know, Mike Fox missed regionals the last 2 years. North Carolina left out at 19, you know, but they actually missed 2 years before they were the number two national seed this year. But anyway, Stanford, Cal State Fullerton, BYU, and Sacramento State. I have no reason for this. I have no animosity towards Stanford whatsoever, but I'm kind of pulling for Fullerton to come out of this regional.
Fullerton won a series against them earlier in the year. Fullerton pitches now. Yeah, I mean, obviously, West Coast and Vanderbilt, they're going to pitch. I think you're right. I think Fullerton does get out of that regional because they hit a little more this year than they had last year. That's going to be interesting, though. Those are two teams. They played three times earlier in the year at Fullerton, and Fullerton won two of them. I think that's going to be one of the more entertaining regionals.
What could at least be entertaining, depending on how some teams play, I definitely like them to come out of it because I like them to go to the College World Series again. Tim Tadlock and his Red Raiders at Texas Tech, but they draw Arizona, the national runner-up from last year, as the 2 seed. They get Sam Houston State, who's a very capable 3 seed. I guess the reason I'm saying this, I wouldn't be shocked to see the Red Raiders and maybe the Bearcats in that winner's bracket game on Saturday.
That wouldn't either. Arizona, if you kind of look at them, they haven't really done much. I don't know how the RPI is what it is, but they haven't really done much from a metric standpoint. I mean, that's not to say they should be a 2 seed. They should. But I agree with you. I think Sam Houston State kind of wins that game. Arizona, they were a good team last year, obviously, and they're turning a lot of those guys, but I'm with you. Sam Houston State will probably knock those guys off.
What do we think about Florida State? They're in here as this host opposite there. Auburn is there as the 3 seed. They've got UCF as the 2 seed, a team that won 20 games in Lovelady's first season, replacing Terry Rooney, who was the pitching coach at Alabama before he was let go with that staff, I assume, in Tuscaloosa. But you look at this resume for Florida State, and they get swept by North Carolina. They lose to Florida pretty much every time they play them. They lose to Virginia. I mean, they beat Louisville 2-0, so I'll give them that. But for the most part, it's a fairly underwhelming host site there at 14-14 in the league.
Yeah, you had to give that host site to somebody, though. I guess someone had to get that.
Well, yeah, Virginia. Give it to them.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Florida State, though, here's the thing with them. They were supposed to be a lot better than what they were, and they kind of got hot to the stand. That kind of gives you some pause about them, but they may be about to go on a run because they struggled throughout the year. But they shouldn't have been as bad as they were. They went into Louisville, they were 12-14 in the league. And if they lose a game, they only played 2 games. If they finish, I think, 13-15, they're in a mess too. So they went from the bubble to hosting in literally a week. I mean, that's kind of the thing with the conference record. Is Florida State, they were going to Louisville, they were 12-14. And they had to win at least 2 games there to get to even. That's the thing with the conference record that's going to make this ridiculous. Is the line is you can be a bubble team for 1 week and then out the next and then hosting the next. It's just kind of ridiculous.
With Thompson and Mize, can Auburn get through that regional?
Are they healthy?
Let's say yes for the sake of it.
Yeah, they can get through it. Because, I mean, both those guys can win you a game. Central Florida's good. Isn't Central Florida 2 seed there?
Yeah, UCF, yeah.
Yeah, Central Florida's really, really good. So I tend to go for Thompson that first game. Yeah, they can get through it if both of those guys win games. Even one of those loses the game, they go home. Because they don't have anything past those guys. But yeah, they can absolutely come out of the regional.
I saw a lot of, on the Ole Miss message boards, and I get why, it's your two in-state rivals playing each other in the same regional. I completely understand it. This really isn't a criticism. But, and I think you'll agree here, it's just kind of a baseball nerd and looking at this thing. I don't necessarily think that regional is a cupcake for anybody. I mean, in Hattiesburg, you're sitting here, that is a sneaky, weird regional with some not necessarily name teams involved, and everybody's going to look at it, and it's never going to be sexy to anybody whatsoever. That thing is incredibly strange, though, when I look at this, because South Alabama's the 3, State's the 2, and then Illinois-Chicago is the 4, who has arms. I mean, I get it, but there's always that 4 seed that shocks somebody. I really would not be stunned to see an Illinois-Chicago, Mississippi State second day. UIC did take 2 out of 3 from Vanderbilt earlier in the year in Nashville.
UIC beat a really good Wright State team to win that league, too. And Wright State's always been good. That's the thing. They can beat Southern Miss. The thing with Southern Miss that shocked me I mean, you sure Ole Miss fan, you're probably glad they did it. They ran their starter back yesterday for their eighth. They started him on Wednesday. They ran him back out there on Sunday for 4 innings. So is he going to be able to go Friday? I mean, I assume he'll be able to go, but he might not be as fresh as he could have been. I don't know. That's interesting. I think I'm with you. I think Illinois Chicago. I tell you what, I wouldn't sleep on South Alabama either. Those guys can play. I can't remember the coach's name there. I should.
Calvin.
He always does a really good job. And look, State's got Pilkington on Friday. They'll probably win that game. But I tell you what, South Alabama's going to give them all they want.
They've also played State early this year. They're incredibly familiar with each other. So I got to think that favors the better team, and that'll be a positive for Mississippi State as well.
That's true.
If State did happen to get out, you'd have a pretty good storyline. Andy Cannizzaro probably headed back to LSU because no one is even getting close to beating LSU at the box this weekend. No. The Baton Rouge Regional, a national seed for LSU. Texas Southern in the first round, the mighty SWAC champions who went 20-32 on the season. Rice, who gets in on the last day, as you mentioned, and Southeastern Louisiana. SLU's a pretty good club, but the Tigers may win all these games by at least 5 runs.
If I'm Rice, I'm asking to go anywhere else at this point. They sent them that there, I think, the past 3 regionals. They damn near won it last year. But, no, LSU's not losing to anybody. They're going 3-0, and then they're going to beat whoever comes out of that Southern Miss Regional. I wouldn't be shocked at this point if it's LSU and Oregon State for the national title. I think that's who I'm going to pick.
They're on the same side of the bracket.
Oh, well, wait. LSU's the 3 and Oregon State's the 1, aren't they?
I'm literally looking at a bracket. Maybe they screwed up.
Damn. Well, then they won't be playing for the national title then. I do think those two finish first and second on that side of Omaha then.
Yeah, you could play them on those two games. This isn't right, I don't think, because they've got LSU the 5 on D1 baseball. They're the 4. No, they're the 4.
I thought they were the 4 too.
They're the 4. That's exactly what they're. Okay. They're the 4. So this is wrong. I'll get Kendall onto that. Moving to the other side here, we mentioned Gainesville, we mentioned Florida, Marist, Bethune-Cookman, and South Florida. South Florida, a team with an incredibly high RPI. For some reason, they were a little worried, but I think they got in without too much trouble whatsoever. Bethune-Cookman, not the same team as they used to be with Merville Melendez when they kind of scared Ole Miss even back in 2006. Ole Miss beat them 3-2 on a Friday night to open that regional. But Florida will move on, and they will play the winner of the Wake Forest regional. So if I had to pick a team other than Oregon State that goes, hey, they're in Omaha, I think it's the Florida Gators.
Yeah, definitely. I do worry about Singer, though. He struggled against Arkansas. He struggled in his last start. That's going to be something to follow. They may move him to the number 3 guy, though.
I bet they have some depth.
Yeah, I bet they got somebody.
Kevin will find a dude down at the end of the bullpen, and he'll throw 7 innings against Maryland or whoever comes out of that thing and moves on. Wake Forest, though. If you were a 2 or a 3, you probably wouldn't get sent to Winston-Salem other than the whole matchup with the Gainesville Regional. Maryland, Baltimore County, Maryland, and then West Virginia there in Winston-Salem. Who's winning that? Because I get no read on that regional whatsoever. I don't like any of the 4 teams.
Give me West Virginia. Wake Forest's ballpark is kind of like Kentucky's, where they just hit it out all the time. And I'm going to take the arms in June with Randy Mazey. He's a really good pitching coach. Give West Virginia win that regional.
Okay. I will fill out our bracket with West Virginia because, like I said, I'm doing one now, and we'll see how we do. So we'll throw West Virginia in right there. If they get to Omaha on their side of the bracket, will be either the Fort Worth or the Fayetteville regional winner. We'll start in Fayetteville. Arkansas, Oral Roberts 1-4. Missouri State, as we talked about, is the 2. Oklahoma State is the 3. Oklahoma State had to beat Oklahoma twice to even get into the Big 12 tournament. They end up winning the Big 12. They steal a bid from somebody. They're in the field. Missouri State probably beats them on Friday night, but I got to think as long as Trevor is on for the Hogs on the next day, I like the Razorbacks to at least end up in the regional final and have a good shot here.
Yeah, I think Arkansas goes too. Another question about Arkansas is, can they finish that last game? Because past the following night, they're not that dominant on the hill. Now, they're going to hit. But Missouri State's going to hit, too. That's what's interesting to me. I do think Arkansas goes 2-0, but I'm kind of interested to see what they'll do on Sunday and kind of pass that.
So you want Missouri State to beat Oklahoma State just to set up a match there with Arkansas?
Yeah, yeah. And then I guess I'll have Arkansas moving on. It wouldn't shock me if Arkansas went 2-0 and then lost 2 in a row.
Really?
No, I mean, you got Stephon and Knight and Ronan, but who else out of that 10 do you kind of trust? Tacolini's falling off. Tiberius isn't that good.
Tacolini started the year as – at one point, he was their Friday arm back in the day.
Yeah.
Not this year because Knight's been good. But in the past, Tacolini was their ace.
Yeah, like 2 years ago, he was a monster. And now he's not, to put it lightly.
Yeah, Arkansas also – I'm having such a hard time with them because Dave Van Horn teams find a way to get to Omaha and find a way to make a little run of the postseason – usually, but they've had some weekends where they just haven't shown up at all. I mean, they've looked ugly at times, including against Arizona and Oklahoma State very early in the year. They played in that tournament out in Frisco where they lost to the Cowboys 8-3 in the third game.
Yeah, Arkansas can fall off the earth quickly. They did play well this week in Hoover. I kind of wonder if that takes something out of them, though. You know, you do see teams go on those long runs. They went through the loser's bracket, too. Go on those long runs next Friday, they're not exactly prepared to go through it.
Fort Worth, Texas, TCU, a national seed. They open with the whipping child, Central Connecticut State, and then Dallas Baptist or Virginia. Not only does Virginia get screwed out of original host, they get sent to Fort Worth. I mean, you really got to wonder here because the last time that a team won that many games in the ACC and wasn't a host was Virginia in 2009, as all Ole Miss fans remember.
Damn.
As they ended up in Oxford. And that team got sent to Irvine and not only had to go across the country and play Irvine, their first game, Stephen Strasburg was on the mound for the opponent. So Virginia not getting a lot of favors from the selection committee when they are not a host site.
If you're TCU, you're kind of pissed too, right?
Well, absolutely.
I mean, that's not the team I want to see down there as a two seed. I'd rather have Clemson as my two seed. Much rather have Clemson. Goodness. I think TCU comes out of that. That was gonna be a dogfight.
I mean, Baker banged up. They're not the same team. They've had some better luck with Janzik here the last couple weeks. But no,
they don't pitch it as well as people think either.
No, they're a shell of themselves compared to what I saw in Houston back in March.
Yeah,
they're not the same team there at all. So Virginia has a chance there. That is an interesting regional. I mean, that was the number one national seed back in the day, but. That regional reminds me a little of when I went to Coral Gables in 08. You know, Miami's number one national seed, and they get a team with Missouri that has Aaron Crow, and then they get an Ole Miss team that has Lance Lynn and Drew Pomeranz in their regional.
Yeah.
And a very finicky Bethune-Cookman 4 seed.
And walked right out of it.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah. Okay, never mind. But yes.
No, what I was getting at is that Miami team was just stupid. I mean, with Yazlan. With Grandal and all those guys.
Jamil Weeks.
That team was silly.
It was the grown-up version of the 06 team that won the regional in Oxford, or Super Regional in Oxford.
That's exactly what they were. TCU's not near as good as that Miami team at all. Especially, I don't know, they were talking about Baker may return. I don't know. I mean, that looked like a pretty serious injury. I don't know if it comes out of that. I guess I'll take TCU because they're at home, but it wouldn't shock me at all if Virginia comes out of it. I know Dallas Baptist and Central Connecticut aren't, though.
Anybody going to challenge the Louisville Cardinals, or is Dan McDonald destined for another super regional trip? They get Radford, Xavier, and Oklahoma.
Nah.
Okay.
That'll be free.
You said it earlier, Lexington Regional, Kentucky, Ohio, NC State, and Indiana, pitching coach Kyle Bunn, Ole Miss fans familiar with him. They're in Lexington. Committee getting very cute. Can get a Kentucky-Louisville Super Regional, and I think they will. I don't think that Kentucky will be very scared of NC State or Indiana.
Well, this one I'm really good. So, Kentucky's coming out of that. I mean, that part kind of sets up well for them. Indiana pitches it. They don't really hit. I don't know if that's going to translate in that part. North Carolina State's not any good. Yeah, they're coming out of that.
NC State may have been fairly bubbly.
Yeah, their metrics were not great. I guess 16-14 in the league, though. I mean, apparently that gets you in.
That matters more than anything else.
Somehow.
Houston, Iowa, Texas A&M, and Baylor. I saw Nick Lewis back in the day in March. I'm going to go out on a little bit of a limb here, as much as I bashed them for the last how many ever minutes. Texas A&M is going to win this regional.
I think so too. You got Brigham on Friday, and that kid, I think it's not Kolak, but Corbin Martin. I watched him obviously against Ole Miss. That kid can pitch. That bullpen's good with Chafin and Kilkenny. You know, they haven't played well recently, is the only thing. But I think I'm with you. I think Brigham Hill is going to be better. I'm not as high on that kid that threw against Ole Miss on Friday. I don't think he's had a really good year past that game, to be honest. Give me Texas A&M.
He was awesome that day because Ole Miss looked like they had never seen a changeup. And he threw it over and over and over and over and over again. And frankly, it freaked out Ole Miss enough where they went in the tank for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's.
That kid's not been good. I don't think he is that good. A&M's going to beat them on that first day. And then you got Corbin Martin versus, I don't know, Houston throws. I mean, they're good. I watched Houston play East Carolina yesterday. They're pretty good. Here's the reason that is interesting to me. Why not just send Baylor out to Long Beach and put Texas there as the 2 seed? Wouldn't that have been a little more fun? Have Texas and Texas A&M?
Yeah, you set up that matchup when they won't play each other and other things. I mean, it makes all the sense in the world, but instead they give A&M a break and send the Longhorns out on the road. So,
but you have Louisville. It makes no sense.
At least they didn't match up Florida State, too.
Yeah. Thank God. Or Texas, at least Texas A&M and TCU can't play the national title.
Then the last one, they are on Florida's side of the bracket. They are across from Oregon State. They are across from LSU. The North Carolina Tar Heels, Davidson, Michigan, and Florida Gulf Coast not only getting in comfortably as a 2 seed.
Florida Gulf Coast won that league.
Yeah, but they're still a 2 seed.
That's the thing. I can't decide which one's more funny. Is Bethune-Cookman as a 3 or Florida Gulf Coast as a 2? Those are both kind of hilarious.
Sealy's a 2 as well.
Yeah, that's kind of funny. Yeah. I guess Sealy's, they don't really care that much about once you're in, but wow. I mean, that's
going to
be an easy regional for North Carolina, I don't think.
Yeah, and I don't see any of the Houston, A&M, Baylor, and Iowas of the world playing and even competing against North Carolina that next week in the Super Regional.
No, not even close.
So you said you like who? Oregon State, LSU on that side? And then –
yeah. Ooh, let's see. Florida.
Play North Carolina?
Florida. Florida, North Carolina.
So you like Florida to get by, sorry. North Carolina would have to get by Louisville?
Yeah, you know, Dan doesn't have that much success when he gets to Omaha.
One win.
Really? Wow. I think it was Mississippi State, too. Like 07, maybe?
Yeah, I think it's one win. Yeah, because that was the year that I don't know that, you know, back in the day, you couldn't realize just how serious this was going to be with the fan bases and Dan McDonald and Mike Bianco, where this thing was going. Because that day, Ole Miss was in Tempe, Arizona, playing Arizona State. And when the first pitch was thrown to that Super Regional, State and Louisville were already in Omaha. They had already advanced before Arizona State and Ole Miss even threw a pitch.
Yeah, eighth grade me did not handle that well. that's the thing. Louisville is – I just don't know if they set up well for that part. Give me North Carolina.
You were really mad at Mike for going to Satterwhite or not going to Satterwhite to start the night there, weren't you? Back in 07?
It was funny. I didn't even get to watch game one. I was playing like a baseball tournament. My dad was over there like listening, like giving me updates out of catching. And all of a sudden, I think Ole Miss was up 3-1. Next thing I knew, he was telling me they lost. So I really didn't even know what happened. And then I think they just got bombed the next day.
Yeah, it was 7-1, I believe, the next day. The first game, it was 3-1, and they gave up 3 in the ninth to lose 4-3.
That's right. They could have gone to, like, Biddle or Satterwhite, but hadn't both of those kind of, like, struggled that way?
It was Biddle's terrible year, and then Satterwhite hadn't been very good either, and he stuck with Will Klein and just kind of got banged around a little bit. And I've got a buddy that to this day is mad at Logan Power for not diving because there was, like, 2 outs in the ninth, and it would have forced extra innings had he caught it. And the ball was at least 25 feet from him, but he didn't dive for the ball. And I have a buddy irate to this day, 10 years later, about it. But I digress. Yeah.
The thing is, they kind of bombed Lance Lynn the next day. So, I mean,
yeah, odds are it wasn't going to go well in game 3. Just saying.
So, I mean,
That team was really good. You look back, that was Brett Wallace, that was Mike Leake, that was Eric Sogard, that was Petey Paramore was on that team. Kyle Rowling was on that team, the guy that kind of started the Ole Miss hatred there because he was they kept recruiting him after Ole Miss had been recruiting him. There's a little story there with Kyle Rowling. So
that's the reason where Mike and Pat Murphy got into it, wasn't it?
Yeah, that is true. That was somebody threw a bat just at the ground, and I think it hit Eric Sogard in the leg, and somehow Eric Sogard ended up between Evan Button, Fuller Smith, and Alex Kleeman, which, from a hothead, ready-to-go standpoint, probably the three worst Ole Miss players to get between. So it got ugly fast, and then Mike and Pat Murphy got out there. Kyle Bunn, who's a pretty good-sized boy, got out there. It was fun for a little while, and then Pat Murphy in the press conference was mad that Jordan Henry beat Mike Leake to the first base bag, and he made some motions and told us that he wished he had a taser because he would have tased Mike Leake because he couldn't outrun Jordan Henry to first base.
Well, yeah, I mean, gotta get faster.
Of course, yeah. I mean, I kind of like to cover Pat Murphy, frankly. I'm just being honest.
Yeah, well, it won't be in the NCAA anymore.
No, it won't. So, anyway, overall, let's kind of end here. Let's take all the stuff aside. What grade would you give the committee? How do you think they did?
Just from the teams that got in, I can't overlook St. John. That one bugged me. It's going to be. I don't think it was as atrocious as people think. I think the Clemson-Virginia thing really bothers me. St. John's bothers me. But yeah, B. I'm going to B.
Yeah, I think those are the only two just egregious problems is Clemson as a host and then St. John's getting in. I could be a little more finicky on seeds, but as we've been saying, that really matters nothing more than jersey color, so I'm not overly worried about that. You good with Stanford as the 8? Because when I actually looked at the totality of the resume, I think I am. I like them getting the 8 ahead of Kentucky.
I think it was kind of a top. I mean, I think if I had to go, I would go Stanford. I think Stanford is the better team. So I think if it did come down to that, I think they did the right thing. So, yeah, I'm completely fine with that. I'm glad Southern this isn't a shot at Southern Miss. I'm kind of glad Southern Miss didn't get it because you play 0 games in the top 25. You probably don't deserve a national seed.
Yeah, that's fair. Ole Miss next year taking a road trip to Long Beach State for a weekend. Does it matter at all?
No. That's the thing is Ole Miss, you know, you say you count the governor's comp. Well, to be 500 overall, here's what's interesting to me. If you're going to be 500 overall, you either got to go 15-15 and win the governor's comp or 16-14 going to Hoover. If you go over there 15-16 to Hoover, you got to win 3 games to be 500 because you're going to lose 2. That's what's interesting to me is if you're going over to Hoover, say you're Alabama and you're 15-15, you lose on Tuesday, well, you're done. It doesn't matter what your metrics say. So I'm interested to see how teams kind of approach the SEC tournament from now on.
Mike Bianco didn't really have much of an opinion. He just said they voted unanimously to keep it as it is. Should the SEC copy the ACC and guarantee 3 games, play a pod system?
Here's what I think. The ACC actually changed it. They only guarantee 2 now.
I saw that on the schedule the other day, and I was really confused by that.
Yeah, I think they should absolutely do that because say you're 15-15, you can go over there and go 1-1. Say you go 1-1, you're 16-16, you're fine. You go 0-2, that's kind of on you. But if you go 15-15 and go 1-1, you're 16-16. Well, the way they break ties, if you're 1-1, that means somebody else has got to be 1-1. Well, if you're 1-1, the higher seed advances. Well, in the SEC, the higher seed, the 1, 2, 3, or 4 teams, is not
they're safe
be
anyway.
Team.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're not going to go 1. If you go 1-2, it's fine. The team, the bubble teams, if they go 1-1, well, they're not going to advance. They're going to go 1-1, and they're going to get in. So, yes, absolutely. If they're going to take 12 teams, they should absolutely go to the 4 teams, 2 games, and do it like that if they're going to enforce this stupid or 500 conference record thing.
And if you're – yeah, because if you're 2-1, you're getting some benefit. You can maybe keep playing. You're in the semifinals, and you're rolling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the because when you go to the SEC tournament, you're going to lose 2 games, you're going to win the title. I guess you could lose 1 if you start on Wednesday, but if you start on Wednesday, there's nothing to worry about.
Right.
So if you lose 2 games, I mean, at that point, you know, that's 2-1 losses. If you came in at 15-16, you're probably not going to be eligible.
Yeah. Well, Colin, I appreciate it on the board and on today's show. We'll talk to you again.
All right. Appreciate it.
Again, our thanks to Colin Brister for joining us on the podcast. He joined us on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline, the Rebel Locker Room, West Jackson Avenue in Oxford. It is the place to go for all of your officially licensed Ole Miss gear. All the colors, all the styles, it's there at the Rebel Locker Room. Football season tickets available at olemisstix.com. That's olemisstix.com. Podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home and all the benefits the big mega banks provide. OUB offers all the technology and products you want, all with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with a live person. No buttons to push, no five-minute wait. OUB has the absolute best free checking account you'll find anywhere. It's called Kasasa. If you have a Kasasa account, OUB will refund your ATM fees nationwide. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. And the podcast also brought to you by Michael Oswalt. He's a realtor, specializes in recreational and timberland tracts across the state of Mississippi, works with Tom Smith Land and Homes. It's by far the largest broker of land in Mississippi. Look up his website. It's gotland.com, got-land.com. Read his recent testimonials. Ask about his track record. See the properties that he has listed. Speaking of, the land market's really hot right now. If you're on the fence about selling your land, your hunting club share, or your home with acreage, now is the time. Give Michael a call today. He's ready to meet with you and explain the process. If he can't earn your business in that meeting, he says he doesn't deserve it. Three ways to get in contact with him. 662-719-3967. Visit his Facebook page or send him an email, michael@tomsmithland.com.
I'm not going to talk about this today. This will be a topic later in the week, maybe tomorrow, but I'll tease it for a second. So ESPN using analytics and different things. Top 100 most famous athletes in the world. I saw the list on ESPN.com this morning. Give me 10 seconds here to make sure before I make this statement. And again, I could have overlooked someone. I'm glancing really, really fast. We always talk about baseball, and look, I get it's an American sport. I understand that. I don't see a single player in the top 100.
I'm not even a little surprised.
Yeah, not one even in the top 100. A lot of golf, a lot of tennis, a lot of soccer, a lot of basketball, a lot of football.
Who's the top 10? You want to tease it for tomorrow? I'm curious as hell.
10's fine. Number 10, the guy who got a DUI yesterday morning, Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Number 9, Rafael Nadal.
Yeah.
Number 8, Kevin Durant.
Okay.
Number 7, Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
Number 6, Neymar.
Yeah.
Number 5, Phil Mickelson.
A little surprised there, but kind of not really, I guess.
Number 4, Roger Federer.
Not at all surprised there.
Number 3, Lionel Messi.
Almost surprised that he's that low.
Number 2, LeBron James.
Yeah.
And number 1.
Okay.
Should get it.
Is it all current players?
I mean, you counting Tiger as current? But yeah, I mean, I don't notice anybody
not
on here.
Not Jordan, right?
No.
Okay,
no.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
I'm guessing number 1 is it basketball?
No.
Soccer?
Yep.
Oh, why do I not know this? Oh, Cristiano Ronaldo.
That is correct, yes. Your boy's at 35, by the way.
Russell?
Yeah, 35.
Pretty good still.
Yeah, but like,
where
Ali Raisman, there's a lot of gymnasts on the list. Uh-huh. I mean,
where's Novak Djokovic?
12.
Yeah.
11, Steph Curry. 12, Djokovic. McElroy at 14.
Where's the highest? Where's Tom Brady?
21.
21. Is he the highest in NFL?
Appears to be. That's what I'm getting here.
Where's the highest NHL? Is there an NHL player on the top 100?
The sad part here is I don't know all the names. So okay. There could be some NHL players.
Like I was wondering like if Sidney Crosby was in that list.
Crosby's not on the list.
Then there's probably not one.
Yeah. Crosby's not.
Is Jordan on the top 100?
Didn't see him. The only Jordan is Jordan Spieth.
Where's he?
17.
Wow.
It's So, yeah. Actually, golf got more there than I expected.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Golf got a lot higher marks than maybe I would have thought they would.
Ryder Cup gives that a international appeal, in my opinion. I could be dead wrong.
Well, and a lot of Europeans like Americans. I mean, it just kind of is across the board.
Yeah. A lot of soccer.
Ton of soccer. Conor McGregor and Ronda Rousey, both very high.
It was the argument that I was not having, but I was going to ask about UFC. What about boxing? It was the highest. And I'm like you, I wouldn't even know the names of all the boxers.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, let me see if like Mayweather's on the list. Hold on.
That'll be a fun topic tomorrow.
Yeah, no Mayweather, so I was assuming that might have been the highest one if it was.
Who was I just thinking about?
I might even go through the list a little bit and click on some names. And
Odell Beckham Jr. in there?
I'm not sure.
Kind of a dynamic football player. Kids like him because of his catches.
Can also kind of click on the guys, and it tells me why, what's ahead, and then it looks like they're ranking some of it on endorsements, Instagram followers, Twitter followers, Facebook followers, and then some other different things as well. Spieth has gone from 50 to 17 in 1 year. I just happened to click on his name as an example.
And it's interesting with him because when I watch him play, I don't...
He's boring. Yeah, for the non-golfer, he's boring.
Not particularly dynamic.
No. If anything, he kind of complains and is kind of whiny. But he...
We're like Serena Williams.
But like Spieth has... Also, endorsement dollars counting into this. He made $32 million last year in endorsements.
Yeah.
So that plays a role.
He made a lot of money. NASCAR? Anybody? Any top NASCAR?
Dale Earnhardt Jr. is on the list.
Okay. That sport's in trouble. And I don't mean in
Serena
terms of,
not on the list.
Wow. And when I say the sport's in trouble, I don't mean NASCAR's dying. I'm not saying that. I'm saying they're losing their most marketable name, and they've got to figure this out.
Yeah, it's analytics devised a formula that combines endorsements with social media followings and internet search popularity. So that's
weird about baseball, isn't it? The sport's really healthy.
Regionally, it's dynamic.
Yeah. Guys who play the sport make a ton of money, make a lot of endorsement money in their local markets.
Beckham's 64.
Yeah.
Jimmy Johnson on the list. Just kind of scrolling.
Where's he?
80-something, maybe.
Yeah. No in MLB.
Not that I saw. Again, could have missed somebody, but just scrolling. I mean, like, Hope Solo's at 75. So, we'll go through it anyway.
Soccer's bigger than people want to give it credit for. And I get – it's funny how I get nailed on this. I'm not a soccer guy. I don't sit and watch soccer. Unless you count 10-year-old soccer, and that doesn't count. I don't stop and watch soccer. I watch the World Cup. We all watch the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't watch soccer. I don't stop and watch MLS. But I can look at what's happening like in Atlanta.
Atlanta's a good thing, and I'm not talking – Stephen Wilson's our boy. I'm not talking about Steve in the post on the board. I'm talking in general. Southern soccer fans, though – they're kind of – it's my one reason here, and again, we can continue this tomorrow, and we've gone way long on this podcast, so we'll go here in a minute. But it's the equivalent from a fan standpoint, for me, again, because I don't have an opinion one way. I don't watch it. I don't hate it, whatever. I'd probably like to go to a game in Portland or somewhere because they really like it. It'd be kind of cool. Otherwise, I don't care.
Right.
The soccer fan in a non-traditional market – is the same as the obnoxious college football writer, though.
Yes.
If you don't love it and say it is the greatest thing on earth,
you're
an idiot.
You're a dumbass. No, that's not it. I look at it. I'm not that way because I'm not into it. I know that the Atlanta United has the one really good player that keeps scoring a bunch of goals, but if you made me name him right now, I would be in trouble.
Okay.
He's a young dude, and he scores a bunch of goals, and he's dynamic, and people are like, ooh, he's really good. Okay, I got it. What I notice with it is the size of the crowds, the vibrancy of the crowds, the youthfulness of the crowds. If I'm being completely honest, some of the socioeconomics that appear to be of the crowds, and I think hard to ignore that. Hard to ignore that thing has some momentum in a city like Atlanta where the Hawks play in front of, and the Hawks are a playoff team. And that stadium's never full. I watch lots of NBA. I watch the Hawks a lot. No one's there.
Oh, no, I mean.
That's all I'm saying. You can't help but notice the momentum. Portland, Kansas City, there are cities around the country where the sport has gained a lot of momentum. Am I saying it's the next NFL? Nope. That it's the next NBA? Nope. I'm not ready to put it there. I'm not ready to put it above the NHL. But when people go, no, their soccer's awful. I hate soccer. It's a comedy. No, come on. It's got momentum. And as young people, when I was a kid, soccer was not cool. Wasn't cool to play soccer. The Goobs played soccer. That's not the case anymore. In a town like Oxford, which is down the street from a big SEC football program, it's no longer uncool to play. They've won state championships. Ed Ashoff has talked about this. It's become a bigger deal. There's more money put into it. There's more invested in it. It's a bigger deal. And it's growing. It's growing all over this part of the country. It's growing all over the country. And it's not just people from different countries that come here and grow the sport. No, the sport's growing on a different level. And you can, if you have kids and you drop those kids off at school and the kids don't wear uniforms, you'll notice that you see a lot of Neymar and you see a lot of Ronaldo and stuff like that. You see a lot of soccer. There's a lot of kids that are into soccer at a level deeper than the youth team they play on.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying.
All right, more on that list, more on baseball, more on a lot of things as the week moves on. So thanks to Colin. We'll talk to you tomorrow.